emanating out into the deep, dark night from Main Street in Marysville, Ohio. It's the Grand Dark Conspiracy. I am your host, Daniel Bouts. It's my pleasure and honor to be bringing you tonight's program here. We are so close to Halloween. We are just a little over a week away, actually. Technically, we're just a week away from Halloween. Well, in the spirit of Halloween, we're going to be talking ghosts. We're going to have the Ohio Exploration Society in studio with us. And we're going to be playing EVPs. We're going to be talking paranormal, ghosts, and all their paranormal investigations, the way they investigate, and all that fun stuff with Philip Nicholas and Jason Robinson tonight on the Grand Dark Conspiracy. That's what we've got lined up. Of course, links are up at granddarkconspiracy.com. You can check that out. You can link up with their website, which is ohioexploration.com. Links are up. You can go out there. You can check out some of their past investigations. One of the really, really amazing things about this group is they're urban explorers as well as paranormal researchers. They cover a wide swath of the Ohio territory. They go all over, and they've investigated some really cool historical sites. They've done paranormal investigations as well as just going out and checking out historic sites here in Ohio. And you can check out their website. You can also request help from them by going to that website. And you can also link up to them on Facebook. And just, I believe it's facebook.com/Ohio Exploration. So that's, and they also have a Twitter account as well. You can just go on Twitter and look for Ohio Exploration at Ohio Exploration. And that should be the Twitter handle for the guest tonight. Of course, if you want to link up with the Grand Dark Conspiracy, you can do that several different social media avenues. Facebook.com/Grand Dark Conspiracy. Our Twitter handle is at GDC Feed. Go out there and follow us. And if you're into Instagram, we have an Instagram account as well. You can follow us there also, and that's Grand Dark_Conspiracy. That's how you'll get information about the upcoming shows for the Grand Dark Conspiracy. That's also how you can feedback to us. You can post stuff to us and let us know what you think of a show, or you have something that you want to share with us. That's a way to do it off air. If you want to share with us on air, the number is 877-609-9445. I had a few people asking me about that tonight after the lights went out, and I couldn't remember the middle three digits. It was 877-609-9445. So that's the call-in line to the Grand Dark Conspiracy. If you've got any really cool paranormal stories or ideas that you would like to share with us, that is the Grand Dark Conspiracy hotline. Also, if you're on Skype, you can Skype us at GDC_Daniel. So those are the ways that you can get a hold of us as far as it goes with the show. You want to take the Grand Dark Conspiracy with you wherever you go. You can do that a couple different ways. You can download the podcast, which is updated daily. It's a week delay, but you'll get last week's show every day of the week. And you'll be able to listen to that on your iPod, you know, whatever MP3 player you have. It's an MP3 player, MP3 that you can download either by going to the guests page on the Grand Dark Conspiracy homepage, or you can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. So either way, you can get us that way. If you want to listen to us live, though, and you're driving out of the Union County area and maybe the feed's getting a little weak or maybe it's fuzzing out on you, you can listen to us via the TuneIn app, and you can do that by going to granddarkconspiracy.com, and there's an icon there right next to the Instagram one and before the RSS feed logo. That's the TuneIn app logo. You just click on that, it'll take you directly to the WQTT 1270 AM feed, and you'll be able to subscribe to that, and you'll be able to listen to us wherever you are on your smart device, your smartphone, or in your car if you've got that kind of Wi-Fi capability in your vehicle, which a lot of people do. I don't, because I drive a POS. That's That's a really awesome car. But that's all the ways you can get a hold of us. Tomorrow night, we've got a fantastic guest lined up for you. We're going to be talking about something a little bit creepy, a little bit different. We're sticking with ghosts, but it's not the typical ghost that you're used to hearing about. At least, not most of us. We'll be talking with author Zach Davidson, and we'll be talking about his book, Yuri, the Japanese Ghost. And we're going to be looking into the ghost lore of Japan. So that's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow night with myself and Dave Considine. Of course, that is tomorrow night. And if you missed any of the shows this week, you've missed out on a lot of great shows. We had Courtney McInvale Reardon, and she talked about Haunted Mystic. We had Joni Mahan on, and she talked about Bones in the Basement. That's her book. And you want to link up with these, you can certainly go and check them out at grandarkconspiracy.com. And last night, we had a lot of fun. We had pretty much a roundtable discussion with myself, David Myers, Elise Myers Walker, and James Daly II about inside the Ohio Penitentiary. And I was talking a lot about that today as well. Some very interesting facts that maybe didn't get brought out on the show. But, I mean, just thinking about in this general area, the area that we all live in, Marysville, Bell Fountain, all the outlying Columbus, Dublin, all these places that we are experiencing in our everyday life. If you just rolled it back about 100 years or maybe a little bit more, you would be witnessing things like public hangings and just all kinds of, I don't want to say amazing, but atrocious, somewhere in between amazing and atrocious things you would be experiencing instead of what we have now. I mean, just the thought of people, 50,000 people in Bell Fountain to see a public hanging, it just seems really weird to me. I can't even really fathom that many people wanting to see somebody pass away. But that is just how far we've come culturally in respect to prisoners and criminals and how we treat each other. It's kind of amazing. I mean, to me, I think we've moved a very long way. And I just can't ever imagine moving back into a society where we witness public executions. Maybe that would change our attitudes about the public execution. I don't know. I'm not going to get into a whole political diatribe or try to justify or denigrate the capital punishment in the United States. That's not what I'm touching at. It's amazing to me how much we've changed. When you look back at history, some things seem really odd and out of place. And if you move them forward today, the anachronism would be almost unbearable. It's amazing to me where we are now in shortly under a century, because I think public execution has been part of our culture for so long, and now it's not. And I don't, like I said, I'm not going to get into some kind of diatribe about capital punishment. I'm not going to express an opinion on that here. I just like to talk a little bit about how we've changed. It's just kind of amazing when we look at history, and that's one of the reasons I love history. It just tells us so much about who we were, who we are, and who we're going to be if we pay attention to it. And that is also kind of plays into what we'll be talking about tonight with the Ohio Exploration Society. They are very focused on the history. They're very focused on the history of this specific area. These gentlemen have brought in some EVPs and things like that, but they also brought in a passion for history. That's one of the things that maybe not every paranormal investigation team does is look at the history of the locations they're at. They do the digging, but these guys do. They're a really different beast than a lot of other paranormal investigation groups, because they just don't focus solely on the paranormal aspects of the locations they're at. Sometimes they don't even focus on it at all because they're interested in the history as well and preserving it. So I think that that's going to make for a very interesting mishmash for all of you to kind of listen to a couple of gentlemen who, well, they obviously are passionate about the paranormal, but are also passionate about the preservation of the history here in Ohio and in this general location. I mean, you know, they've been all over Central Ohio, and when they're from Central Ohio, So I think that maybe that's why I think it's a good pairing, the Grand Ark Conspiracy and the Ohio Exploration Society. And hopefully they'll be back time and again. And it was a lot of fun to have them in studio. I mean, that's the thing. Having a person sitting across from me talking to me about their investigation is really exciting. It's really a lot of fun, and I think it allows for a more personal atmosphere. So hopefully we'll continue to do that going into the future. So that's what we've got coming up in just a little bit. I wanted to remind everybody that my brother's book is out. You can go to Amazon.com and look for Benjamin Bout, or you can search it by the title, Don't Eat That. It's only 99 cents. It's a Halloween story. So it's in the vein of Halloween, like most things on the Grand Ark Conspiracy, especially coming next week. We've got some really cool stuff that we're working on for you guys next week. Some great guests, and I'll fill you all in about that tomorrow night. But tomorrow night, also, I just want to remind everybody, we'll be talking about Yuri, the Japanese ghost. I'm probably saying that wrong, but that's okay. I don't know Japanese, and when our guest comes on, I'll have Zach Davison remind me or correct me on how to properly pronunciate that specific word. But I'll have links up for all of you to get a hold of that book as well. We're going to be talking about Japanese ghost lore and Japanese ghosts with him tomorrow night. But tonight, it's me, Jason Robinson, and Philip Nicholas in studio, the Ohio Exploration Society's members, breaking down the paranormal. If you want to see a really cool ghost photo, too, from the Ohio Exploration Society, a really amazing photo that they brought in. I've posted it on Instagram. You can check it out at Grand Dark_Conspiracy. So I would encourage you all to check that out. It's a really cool photograph, really kind of amazing. And then we're going to be having EVPs at the end of the show from them as well. So a lot of fun, a lot of cool things to look for here on the Grand Ark Conspiracy. I'm going to go ahead and take a quick break here, and we'll have the first commercial, and then we'll be live with the Ohio Exploration Society's members, Jason Robinson and Philip Nicholas. All right, we're going to take this break, and we will be right back. Thank you. I am really excited to be bringing on to the Grand Dark Conspiracy Jason Robinson and Philip Nicholas of the Ohio Exploration Society. They're actually in studio with us today, which is fantastic. This is the first in-studio interview that we've conducted here on the Grand Dark Conspiracy since coming to WQTT 1270 AM. So we're going to be talking, well, about the Ohio Exploration Society, their investigations, and what they do particular to looking into the paranormal. So welcome to the Grand Dark Conspiracy, guys. If I could get each of you to kind of introduce yourselves so everyone gets to hear your voice and get recognized. We don't have to keep saying, well, Philip or Nicholas. Philip or Jason, go ahead, you know. So if you could start, Philip.
I'm Philip Nicholas. Pretty good looking, and grew up in Ohio.
So another Ohio boy, okay.
Yep.
I'm Jason Robinson. I'm the founder of the Ohio Exploration Society. Grew up in Columbus and live in Pickerington now, which is a little suburb of Columbus.
So I've got to ask, you know, starting with each of you, how it is that you got involved personally in paranormal investigation and, you know, why it is that you continue investigating the paranormal?
When I first started investigating the paranormal, when I made the Ohio Exploration Society, we started out as a strict urban exploration group, going out to abandoned buildings, cemeteries, and things like that, taking photos, researching history. Well, a couple of the members that I started a group with, we were all kind of into the paranormal growing up, you know, watching unsolved mysteries and things like that, and we said, hey, why don't we look for ghosts while we're out taking pictures of these abandoned buildings? And it kind of rolled from there, and then we started offering investigations to people that were interested in doing that. So, and we started doing that. The OES was founded in 2000, so we'll be going on 15 years this year.
So 15 years is a lot of time to be exploring, you know, the urban areas as well as the paranormal. Now, prior to the foundation, you know, and beginning to look into the paranormal, had you had any experiences with the paranormal?
The experience that got me really interested occurred when I was going to Denison University. I was sitting in my dorm room one night typing up a report at my computer, and my roommate had gone out for the evening, and I had the door shut behind me. There was a water leak in the room, so our door frame was swollen, and it would make a really loud noise when you opened it. So I'm sitting there by myself, and all of a sudden I felt a hand on my right shoulder, like someone's looking over to see what I'm doing, and I'm like, I didn't hear the door open. So I was thinking, who is this? And I turned around, no one was there. It got ice cold in the room, and I was frozen. I was thinking, should I sit real still and act like nothing's going on, or should I get up and run? And I got up and ran. I went down to the lobby and waited for my roommate to come back. And the next day, I didn't tell him about it. The next day, I when he was still out, I was like, whatever's here, don't mess with me anymore. You're more than welcome to mess with my roommate, but
I'm done. Alone, yeah. So how about for you, Philip?
Growing up, I've always been very sensitive. I always enjoyed going into cemeteries and stuff. I guess cemeteries were just kind of comforting to me because I had a rough childhood and everything. And so just going to cemeteries and, you know, just feeling as if you know, being watched or whatever, just feeling a presence was actually very comforting to me. You know, being beat up in school and stuff like that, you know, you don't, grew up, didn't have very many friends, so you just went with what you felt comfortable with. And I was going to cemeteries and stuff until I started having doing investigations and having experiences at home.
Experiences at home, those are always kind of disconcerting. I mean, I've definitely had a few of those myself, so I'm no spring chicken when it comes to having paranormal experiences, but I always like to ask, I kind of get the idea of how people get involved in this field, because I think most people, for the most part, have an experience that to them that doesn't make sense with their normal worldview, and they have to start that exploration, and it starts to, you know, lead from one point to another. Now, I don't know for yourselves, when you started the investigation, if it led to more questions for you, or if you began to answer those questions that you had.
I have answered no questions. It's still, after 15 years, I mean, I've experienced so many things over those years, and you know, people always ask, well, what is a ghost and things like that, and I honestly still don't know. And I know I've seen weird things and I've captured weird things on video or in photos, but what it is, I have no idea still to this day.
That's a fair answer too. A lot of people's like, well, it's hard to say I don't know, but I think we're looking at something that is unseen, and we don't have the eyes to see it just yet for most of us. So it's okay for me, like, to say I don't know exactly what's happening. I just know something is happening.
Right.
So for yourself, I mean, has there been any questions answered for you, or you still have the same questions?
I was like everybody, afraid of death, you know, because people say, oh, I'm going to die, you know, I'm kind of afraid of dying and stuff like that. Well, actually, I had an experience with my grandma that before she passed, being sensitive as I am, walked into her house. She was laying on her deathbed in the living room, and you just felt the pressure of death on your chest, like almost you couldn't breathe, like it was a suffocating feeling. And we were taking turns watching, you know, being there for grandma until she passed. Well, she was pretty stubborn. She didn't want to go. She kept saying, where's Frank, which was her husband who died before I was even born. So I never knew Frank. And my Aunt Mary was sitting there, you know, on the couch, you know, everybody's taking their turns, and said, well, why don't you say hi to Grandma? I said, well, I can't, because there's a guy named Frank there standing by the bed. And she kept saying, where's Frank, where's Frank? And, you know, it felt kind of uncomfortable. So I left the house, and Frank was giving me messages of how the funeral was supposed to go, because the family likes to fight a lot.
Okay.
And so for about a month or so, I was getting things, you know, from Frank of how things were supposed to go. And it wasn't until that evening I was working, and I had this feeling that something had happened. I looked at the clock, and it was 8:30. Find out that grandma died at 8:30. So it kind of, like, you know, hit me. And then that wasn't the big part, that the whole extravaganza that happened when I got home. I was tired. I went to bed, and I was laying there trying to doze off, and I was very calm, very relaxed. All of a sudden, I started having this feeling, as a frightening feeling, as if I was dying or something. And next thing you know, I'm on the other side with grandma. So grandma couldn't walk. She had this white dress on, like a white gown. And on her right shoulder, she had white flowers. And we were in this tunnel. It was like a bluish, kind of a crystal, kind of bluish bricks. You look down this tunnel, I was like, good God, it's going to take forever to walk an old lady down this tunnel. Matter of fact, it only took seconds. And I was in this big room with a lot of light, and Frank was standing in the middle of the room. And so I walked her up to Frank, and Frank reached out and grabbed her hand and said, I've been waiting for this for a long time. And there was a, where he was standing, it was kind of like in the middle of this room. And he said, you don't want to come any further, because if you pass this line in the middle, you will pass over. And it's not your time. You need to go back where you left, where you came from. So I turned around and went back, and that's all I remember. I woke up next morning, fell out of bed, couldn't even move for like 3 days. So whatever it was, it drained me pretty bad. But I still hold this memory from the experience that I had. Now death isn't even a part of what I think about anymore, because I'm more comfortable with actually having this experience. It opened up and told me, what I got out of it was that do not take things for granted in your lifetime, because it could be over very quickly, you know? Not many people get this experience, and I was lucky to actually have this experience, so that was the biggest highlight in my life. But, you know, I mean, I have visitors every time at home, so it's pretty much you're living with a roommate, but you just don't see them.
Right.
You know?
So, I mean, that's quite a miraculous experience. That's kind of what a lot of people would call a near-death experience that you had that didn't require you to almost die, but
right.
It also kind of showed you, illuminated at least for you, that there is an afterlife and that there's some comfort to be taken in that, and that now that's one less thing that you have to mark as a fear in your life. You get to know that there's something waiting for you beyond. Well, the reason I would use the word because I think there's as far as in any of this, there's the beginning point where you start, which is jumping out on a kind of a limb and putting a little faith that there might be something else out there. And then as you progress through it, you get to a point to where you believe that there is something else out there, and then eventually you know. And you got to jump over all of that.
Well, I think
and
the most interesting thing was that I forgot to add that when it was the day of her funeral, and, you know, we brought her into the church and laid her down in the casket. Casket was closed, and the priest said, everybody come around and tell you about Caroline Nicholas's Passover, you know, how she's doing. And he said that she had made it over and everything. And then he started describing the white gown that she had with the roses on the right hand of the shoulder. And me and my sister broke down, because my sister was the only one that I relate any of this message from Frank to.
Right.
Out of the whole family, you know. And I broke down. You know, I mean, how can you even comprehend that somebody's going to tell, that somebody mentions the exact same thing that you've seen her wearing when she was on the other side, you know?
There's no explanation for that other than there's a commonality there, and that mm-hmm. two people experience the same thing, and it's kind of one of those things where you just kind of have to take it that it's evidentiary, that what you experienced independently is supported by somebody else, so you almost have to take that as a truth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a pretty miraculous happening, and I can kind of understand, like I said, you kind of went past the faith and belief into just knowing. You, and I think for a lot of people out there, we don't get that, we just have to say, blessing to some degree. It's got to be, at least that knowledge has to be comforting for anybody to have that. So,
well, I think the fact that people are so, they're stuck in their belief, they don't want to experience something like that because they read the Bible or something like that, you know, oh, you're dealing with the devil and stuff like that. I'm not religious. I'm very spiritual. You know, that way I can get both everything in the one world, you know,
right.
What I believe in. And people, you know, it's always, people need to understand it's really good to be skeptic, because yeah. until you see your first spirit, then only you will understand what we go through, what we experience, what we deal with.
And I still call myself a skeptical believer.
Right. Well, I think that's where a lot of people who entertain the thought of the paranormal would put themselves, skeptical believer. Like, you know, you only, and this is one I always kind of draw back to the paranormal or the supernatural, however you want to phrase that, is I always draw back into the thought that, you know, it's always subjective. It's always going to be in the mind of the person that experiences. It's an experience, and you can't deny that experience. And for the individual that has that experience, it's very real. And there's no way for them to be able to dismiss it, and it might change their worldview, but it's still subjective. There's no way that I could relate the stories that I've had of what I've had happen to me, but I can't expect other people to believe it based on my stories, because they haven't had that experience. They don't know how it left them feeling, how it would, you know, left myself feeling, and how it changed my perspective on things. And I think that skeptical believer thing is something that is very important for people to keep for themselves, because until you experience it, there's no way for you to be an actual believer or a true believer, as I like to right. kind of phrase that. You know, there's a lot of true believers out there, and they don't make for good investigators.
Right, right.
But coming back to your investigations, how often, how frequently do you guys go out and do investigations?
A few years ago, it was a lot more frequently. there weren't as many other groups around Ohio at the time, so there was just a handful of groups when we started doing this, so our demand was a little higher. Once the paranormal TV shows came out and everyone decided they would start their own groups, the demand has gone down a little bit. We do a lot bigger things now than we did before. You know, before we'd go to people's houses, and we still do that sometimes. And now we get into larger buildings and things like that to do investigations. Can you think of any off the top of your head we did recently?
shoot, we've done so much. Well, you know, it's just like hard to pick just one, you know. I would say probably the Malabar one was pretty cool.
Yeah, we did investigations with Malabar with the cops group and helped them. We've also, with our urban exploration part of it, going into abandoned places like Cooper Stadium in Columbus, we went in there, and of course, while we were there, we recorded for EVPs and stuff. Not to say, you know, there was no reports of the ballpark being haunted or anything right. like that. And we didn't get anything, but it was an interesting experience nonetheless.
So, I mean, that's one of the things that really struck me about your group, per se, is that it's not necessarily focused completely and directly at the paranormal. It's part of what you do, but you also go out and explore these other sites. So it's about exploration in general of, you know, the human condition, pretty much. I mean, if you're going in and been looking at abandoned buildings, abandoned sites, you're still kind of looking back in time and exploring the historical documents that these locations actually are. You're getting to kind of put yourself in a mindset that shows you the history that's contained within the site. So I thought that was a very interesting way to look at things. I mean, I know that the paranormal is part of what you do, but it's not the whole thing. I mean, it's still just about historical exploration.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And it is very interesting. We always do... We try to do the research on the location before we go there, so we have a good idea of the history of the location. We look up old newspaper articles, try to find things from auditor sites and things like that, and try to get a whole picture before we go in.
I think the one thing we improved on was when we were doing a lot of investigations over the years, man, just sitting there watching these stupid videos and just like, oh, I hope something happens. 8 hours later, you're still sitting there watching a video.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was so much time put in to just sitting down, watching videos, listening to recordings. And now that, you know, now we basically know if we have an encounter, where it's going to be on the recording, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot easier to go back digitally now and have the mark and be able to pull it up on a computer than to sit there and rewind the tape and play back and, oh, that's not the spot that right. I felt something happen. But still, the reviewing of evidence is very time-consuming. That's one thing that a lot of people don't realize, you know, from watching the TV shows and stuff. They'll show them doing the investigation, then the next day they show, okay, we got this and that. We sit there, I mean, if we have several video recorders going, several audio recorders going, and we stay there for 5 hours, you know, that's a lot of hours of review to see if something happens, and usually we get a few seconds of this or that or anything at all.
So, yeah, it's 5 hours times whatever you've used it to record that you've got to kind of go through, even with the digital thing. I mean, is there a way that you've devised to kind of maybe even pare that down, or do you just have to go through all of that every single time?
Like he was saying, if you had an experience and you know the time and you marked it, you can go right to that and look at it. But as far as things that you don't hear or see while you're there, you have to go over the whole thing still to make sure you don't miss anything. And there's been times where we have missed things even after going over it until another person looks at it and they say, hey, did you see this at this time? I'm like, no. And then rewind and look again, and sure enough, something...
I think the fact that they're so embedded in the recording, like, there'd be times you've listened to it a couple of times, you didn't hear it. You know, it's like you said, if until somebody else has that experience, says, oh, did you go, you know, maybe they got it and we didn't, you know.
Yeah, we've had that before, too, where we'd have, you know, three or four audio recorders going in the same spot to record for electronic voice phenomenon. And, we would have a voice come on one recorder and not the other three that were in the room. So it was almost like it picked one recorder over the others. And there's been times when we've picked it up on a couple of recorders and not
other, you know, like you picked it up on two recorders, but not another two recorders.
Right.
And so it kind of varies from, and one of the things I always thought was kind of interesting when you do pick up EVPs is when you have multiple recording devices and it picks up on multiple recording devices, it definitely suggests
more than just picking it up on an individual device, that there's something there in the environment, you know, whatever it may be.
Which right. Somebody's ringing.
Which a lot of...
Sorry, guys.
That's all right. It's all right. You know, but the EVPs, when they're independent versus, you know, multiple, it seems to be more corollary and more evidentiary of something actually being in that environment interacting with you.
Well, if you have to give me one one place that I've been, that we've been, that I was probably scared of, it was probably Nemecolon, because I kept getting beat up. When we went into the bishop room, I always get slugged in the face, and yes, something, whatever was in that room did not like me. I don't know if it was because of my sense of humor or my sensitivity, but every time I went in that room, they were walking out the room, and I got bam, right in my face, you know, right in my jaw, and my whole face is red. I've gotten scratched, you know. So last time we were there, I stood outside the doorway.
Yeah, we walked in the room, and he's standing outside. Are you coming in? He's like, I'm not going in that room anymore.
I don't blame you. I wouldn't want to get punched in the face every time I walked in the room. That would discourage me real quickly. I'm not one for getting smacked around too much or at all. I don't know.
Well, if you want to have that experience, and you know,
yeah, no.
Definitely memorable experience.
Well, there you go. There's a lot of people that really would want to have that experience because they want to have that type of experience, that kind of visceral experience, which is one of the things I've always thought was interesting about, you know, the ghost hunting in particular, you know, paranormal investigation. Well, a lot of people say, you know, oh, it's a fad, it's going to go away, but, you know, it all started with the ghost hunters thing. Well, honestly, that's not true, but this is, you know, a lot of what I hear, and I'm like, you know, this isn't a fad, because when people go out, they're going to go out, they're going to go to graveyards, they're going to go to these purportedly haunted locations, and they're going to have experiences, and it's going to keep them coming back. It's going to keep drawing you back down the rabbit hole, so to speak, because I think a lot of times we don't have the equipment to necessarily get the answers, you know.
And that's half the problem, is the equipment that you have to use is expensive. What, we bought 3 GoPro cameras?
Yeah,
$400 a piece or something like that.
We got some GoPros recently. He got a GoPro with the
full spectrum. He sent me the link. He was like, "Check this really cool thing out," and I was like, "Oh, I bought it," because I know he's been talking about getting a full spectrum camera, and the things are not cheap.
No, it's not. It's not. And the thing is, I mean, honestly, when you look at the equipment, I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about the equipment, what equipment you all bring into an investigation, if that's something that you think is absolutely necessary to have, or if it's something that, you know, depending on the environment that you're going into, I mean, I don't know how you decide what equipment you take with you and what you think is absolutely necessary.
Right. We used to, back in the day, when we were investigating, I was doing like 3 different things at one time until I found out, yeah, I think I'll just nosy on down and just do one thing, because it was just so hectic, you know, using different devices and stuff, you know, it was just so complicated.
The 2 devices I take all the time is my still camera, my digital SLR, and audio recorder. That's my basics that I take everywhere. The rest of the stuff, like EMF detectors and things like that, that's nice to have. So if you do feel something, you can document that, okay, I saw a reading of this on my detector when this weird thing was going on. But it's, I don't think it's necessary to have that kind of thing, but it helps in the documentation of what you're experiencing.
I think we also have to say that most very, very, very important, when you spend a lot of money on a camera, especially a digital Rebel, make sure you get the warranty, because spirits like to mess with your cameras. So as, was that in Elizabeth's grave when I first got my camera?
Oh, yeah.
It was during the day. We went back by this tree where she supposedly hung. My new camera said Air 99, and I was really mad because, I mean, I spent $1,300 on that camera. So I sent it in. I told him that the ghost broke it, okay. Not knowing exactly what was going on with the error. I didn't know what the error message was about. Send it in. I told him I was very, very anxious because I don't like sending my expensive equipment off. So I got it back, and the thing said the reason what was going on, that the lens inside was shattered. So something did, she, whatever it was, did not want me there with that camera and just shattered the whole lens inside. Got it replaced, and then every time I go back, I don't bring my expensive camera. So, you know, if you're going to investigate, you know, Elizabeth's grave in Chillicothe, don't bring an expensive camera, because you never know if it breaks and you don't have a replacement or a warranty on it, you're out a lot of money.
That's, I would be very hangry at a spirit for that. I might want to send them, you know, on their way at that point, you know, get them cleaned out and get them the heck out of there, because I wouldn't want to have to deal with them again. We're going to take a break here. We're talking with Jason and Philip from the Ohio Exploration Society. You want to visit their website, links are up at grandarkconspiracy.com. The website is ohioexploration.com, so that should be pretty easy for all of you out there to remember. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. We've got Jason and Philip from the Ohio Exploration Society with us. You want to visit their site, it's ohioexploration.com. So we were talking a little bit about the equipment that you guys use, and one of the things that I always ask is, when you investigate, do you turn the lights on or off?
Off.
Off?
Yeah, we have them off, and we don't use flashlights unless absolutely necessary, so your eyes adjust. However, if we don't necessarily always investigate at night, because whenever someone has us come in, I say, I want to be there when you have weird things going on. So if that's in the middle of the day, I'm going to be there in the middle of the day.
But nothing really, you know, you can't say something's going to happen at that time, because that's up to the spirit itself. You know, if it's not comfortable, he's not going to do anything to with you, around you. You know, and I... being sensitive, I guess you get a little higher advantage, but, you know, there's times where we've done stuff and nothing really happened, you know?
A lot of times we've done things and nothing happened.
Well, I would imagine, honestly, most of the time that you do, things don't happen. I mean, not all of the time. I just would imagine most of the time. It might be you're there for 5 hours and you have a minute where stuff happens.
Right. And sometimes we're there the whole... And everyone asks, you know, how long do you stay? And I said, it depends on what's going on. If it's nothing's going on and it doesn't look like anything's going to happen, you know, we'll stay for a few hours and pack up and go. If we go there and stuff's flying across the room and people are getting punched, we're going to be there probably all night long.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hopefully people don't get punched too often. I hope you're not getting smacked in the face every time you go into an investigation.
I actually haven't been back to the castle in Pennsylvania in a couple of years. So.
A long time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you're looking at that, you know, I just always kind of ask, because I want to, you know, because some people don't turn off the lights. Some people leave the lights on. I'm always curious as to why you would choose which way, you know. I mean, why is it that you investigate in the dark?
Well, with the infrared cameras and the full-spectrum cameras, they work better if you have the lights off and use a special illuminator for them. So to pick something up in that broad spectrum, it requires the special lighting. So that's part of the reason we do it.
Well, that makes sense. Then the equipment is kind of dictating to you how you do that, because in your opinion, then it's the full spectrum and the infrared are better at picking up than these energies that are in the environment, like visually.
Right. It just sees the broader spectrum than a regular camera, and your eyes can see, and you have some of the natural light anyway, so it also picks up on that. So it's not usually totally pitch dark black where we're investigating. There's only been a handful of locations we've been to like that. So
now, for you guys, what's the best type of evidence that you gather? I mean, obviously, I've seen a pretty incredible picture that kind of blows me away.
Yeah,
but you know, what for you is the creme de la creme that you search for and consistently get that you can use as evidence?
Well, consistently, it would have to be EVP. Most of the time, we'll get an EVP here or there, you know, when we're investigating. On a very rare occasion, we get a really good photo or something strange on video. We've also had personal experiences where we've actually seen things, but unfortunately weren't ready for them to happen.
And your Wooly Burger visit.
Exactly, and we've seen those things, but not had our equipment at the ready at the time.
Well, I know personally, I've been witness to a few investigations, and I remember an auto body shop was being investigated because they were having all kinds of crazy stuff happening. It was scaring off the employees, actually. Mm-hmm. They were, like, the employees, they couldn't keep people hired there.
Right.
So the owner brought in an investigation team, and he had me come in as well to kind of, you know, I guess, be there as well. The investigation team comes in, they do their investigation, nothing happens. The minute they packed up all their equipment, stuff started happening. I remember, like, a door slammed so hard that it broke.
Wow.
But, like you said, no one was ready for that because they wrapped up the investigation.
Right,
exactly.
It was just like, say, I'm here, I knew you were here, and I'm not coming out. I'm not going to be your little, like, ghost monkey or whatever.
right.
So, I mean, I totally kind of understand how you have to be on the ready. So when you go into a location, you're doing a specific paranormal investigation, do you have somebody that's kind of monitoring the whole time to kind of, once you step on that site, be ready? Or is it just this kind
of We don't have a command center type of thing. Most of the time we'll break off into groups of two and, you know, this group of two will go investigate this area, this group of two will go investigate that area. Now that we've got the GoPros going and you can wear those things on your head, hopefully we'll be ready all the time, and what we see we'll capture on film. So those things can record for a long time.
And that's another thing, too. I mean, in your experience, a lot of people will say they see something and it doesn't show up on video or photograph. Has that been your experience as well?
Well, it's just like EVPs. You might hear it and the recorder won't get it.
Yeah, we've had that happen before where we would hear a voice when we were there and then we'd go back to listen on the recorder. It didn't pick it up. So
I think another thing is that's very important to even think about when you're doing ghost hunting is your mental state. Because I tell you what, I suffered from panic disorder all of my 30s, all thanks to a dead woman in a car. As you know, doing deliveries for a floral company. I was out by Mount Vernon. I had to go from Mount Vernon to Delaware,
okay.
One side to the other.
Right.
Usually I take this certain road. I didn't take it. I'm on a two-lane road. Music's blasting. The windows are shut and everything. And all of a sudden I hear this beep, 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 beep. Okay, now that's freaking me out because I know that's Morse code. Nobody does Morse code. Right. There's red cars coming towards me. We get face to face, but you know, just like face to face when we get
that intersection.
Well, it was just like when we came right by each other. I ended up looking over and I saw this young white woman, mid-20s, blonde hair to her shoulders. And her skin and eyes were glazed over, and I thought, where the hell did I see that before? Oh, yes, that's what you look like when you die. And then you got this really overpowering feeling of a heart attack or some medical condition that she died from it and lost control of the car. And not every time you'll go out, you know, when you're sensitive, you're going to have experiences whether investigating or not. But what is it going to do to your mental state? You know, how's your body? Because some people see things that might be tragic, like very gruesome, and your body freaks out because it doesn't know how to deal with a gruesome thing. So I never did find out where this lady was. I never could find the road again, and hopefully, you know, I was just in the right place at the right time, and she was very strong. You know, the strongest spirit I probably came in contact with. And the turn, you know, we're in the middle of the road. You know, like, the stop sign was left and right, and it was a mile and a half down the road. When she passed my car, I looked in the mirror, she was gone.
She's gone, yeah. Which is interesting to me when you talk about a lot of these kind of roadside hauntings or whatever, that typically seems to be the case. They're there for you long enough, and once you pass them, they're gone. Because I know where I grew up, I know we talked a little bit before we came in the studio and sat down, where I grew up there's a legend about a guy who walks along the road, and it's the back roads, and I grew up really rural, down around Malabar Farm. This guy is called the Knapsack Man, because he's always carrying a knapsack on his back. He's got like a long dark hair, and you see him, you drive past him, you look back, nowhere to be found. So, I mean, it's something that I've driven past, I think, three times in driving around. And it's not on main drags. It always seems to be off the main roads, you know. So it's always kind of weird to me. That is, it's like they have enough power to make you visually see them coming up front, because maybe it's because you're not focused on what's happening in your periphery that much. I mean, when you're driving, a lot of us, honestly, kind of get on this kind of mental state where we're on auto drive and we're not really kind of mentally engaged, so we're a little bit, I think, more open unconsciously, so we see these things, and when we see them and we kind of realize what they are, we kind of snap back and look, and then they're gone.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes a great deal of sense to me, but that's interesting that you haven't been able to locate that again, and it just happenstance that puts you in that location, too.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and I told everybody about it, and I still think about it to today. People are just like, well, maybe you went back into a time warp or something. Whatever it was, this spirit alone died on this road and couldn't communicate with other people, maybe. And so, because I was sensitive enough to actually witness her and view her, she was like, oh, there's my chance, you know. Little red car, it was a two-door car. Couldn't see the license plate, and I couldn't see the passenger because they were blurred out. And that's all I have to go on. But it was around between Mount Vernon and Delaware area. Out in the country, so.
Out in the country road, somewhere.
Yeah, darn.
Somewhere. We're talking with Jason and Philip from the Ohio Exploration Society. Going out to ohioexploration.com. Check that out. Links are up at Grand Dark Conspiracy. We're going to go ahead and take our top of the hour break for station identification, and we'll be back in like 9 seconds.
WQTT Marysville. News, sports, weather, and great oldies all day long. Lock it on. True Oldies, QT 1270.
And we're back. You're listening to the Grand Dark Conspiracy on WQTT 1270 AM, streaming online at qt1270.com, or you're linked up with us on iTunes if you downloaded the podcast. Either way, it doesn't matter. Go on out to grandartconspiracy.com. Links are up to go to ohioexploration.com. We've got Jason and Philip with us here, and we've been talking about some of their investigations and their investigation techniques and some of their really kind of astounding paranormal experiences. So I guess coming back into this, you have been investigating for 15 plus years with the Ohio Exploration. Right. Or you're coming into your 15th year.
Yeah, going into.
So out of all of these places that you've gone, are there any places left in Ohio that you want to get to see? I mean, what are some of those locations that you're kind of itching to get to?
I don't really have any itching to get to anywhere. I honestly can't think of a location that I've always wanted to go to in Ohio. I've been to most of the places I wanted to go to. If you go worldwide, if funding wasn't a problem and access wasn't a problem, I think my dream investigation would be at the pyramids. I think that would be an awesome experience.
Mine would be in Romania at Dracula's Castle.
Oh, Dracula's Castle. Okay. Yes. And the pyramids. So we got the Great Pyramids, and we got like the Mummy and Dracula. So we got a couple
universal for Halloween.
A couple of universal classic monsters to look up here. Then, so for you, is it just simply because of the ancient history for Egypt and just to have that?
Yeah, and all the weird like architecture and channels they found in those things, and it, I mean, they had to have been built for some sort of reason, and that debate, I guess, is still going on. And it would be awesome to go in there and, you know, see what I would experience, see what, you know, our equipment would be able to pick up, if anything, and just be there to witness that firsthand.
And Dracula's Castle, I mean,
oh, yeah,
that's kind of obvious. I mean, that's where the most famous vampire of all times is coming out of. So, I mean, are you particularly interested in vampirism or vampires or just because it's Dracula's Castle?
I like the history. I love different cultures, learning different about different cultures and experiencing them. And Dracula was always my favorite character growing up. Why? Because I always loved Castlevania.
So you weren't a fan of Simon then, going in there and trying to kill Dracula?
No, sorry.
Loved Castlevania, but I always
still play it to today.
I thought the Grim Reaper was harder than Dracula. I'm just going to say that. He was harder for me to beat than Dracula. That second boss, you know, the boss right before the big boss.
Yep.
Although I thought it was cheap how you thought you killed Dracula and then he pops back up.
Yep.
But, so, I mean, those are some, like, massively great historical sites. I mean, there's definitely places I want to personally go to investigate and not to investigate, but just to be there. To me, like,
right.
just to kind of soak up the history, because I am a huge history buff, and I mean, that's the thing that I love about Ohio in particular. A lot of people don't realize that there's a really rich vein of history here. And another thing that strikes me, and I know a lot of places are going to claim that they've got tons of paranormal events and stuff, but I think that this is a really uniquely charged location for whatever reason. The Ohio Valley just seems to be full of ghost lore, ghost stories, and all kinds of different paranormal experiences from, you know, the Mothman, which I know happened in West Virginia and Ohio. You've got just all kinds of UFOs, Bigfoot sightings, everything. It's all right here in this little area, which it just kind of blows my mind.
Right. I just don't like how they tear buildings down, you know. I mean, the buildings are beautiful. They have history. Okay, so it looks bad. Renovate it. Stop building cheap buildings and renovate the good ones.
Well, it's like if you don't have to look any further than the Arena District,
knocking
down the Ohio Penitentiary, which is like, I feel that's a great loss.
Actually, it's funny that you bring that up because I have heard reports from businesses that they are having experiences from the prison itself.
Makes sense. Yeah. I mean,
well, you know, you destroy something, you build on a property where many prisoners were buried out in the courtyard, and many of the tragic things that happened, and you're going to stir stuff up.
That makes a great deal of sense. I mean, I think if these things are out there, that they don't just go away. I mean, unless they're unless they're like the recordings, and I don't know how you feel about that. We haven't really touched on that. I mean, do you think that there's residual hauntings and intelligent hauntings and different types of spirits out there?
There could be. I've been doing presentations over the summer where we talk kind of about that, and I tell the people in the audience that no one knows for sure. I mean, you can say, okay, this is records in time and somehow plays back as a residual haunt or something like that, but like I said, there's no way to prove that, so it's hard to say. Going back to new buildings on old building sites, I hear from people all the time, well, my house was just built 3 years ago and I have this going on and that going on, and I'm like, well, what you don't know is what happened there before your house was built. Just because you have a brand new house or a brand new building doesn't mean that something didn't happen there before, and people generally don't think about that.
And it was just like the Gap building that we worked in Grove City. What they bulldozed a cemetery because they didn't know it was there.
Well, a cemetery had been moved that had been on the property where the warehouse, a new warehouse was going up, and I found the records of it in some history books, and it was established, I think, in 1811, and the bodies were moved, but this new building was going up, not on the cemetery proper. The cemetery is in another section of the land, but it was still owned by the warehouse there, but I was there for the construction of the building, and most of the construction workers knew that I was into the paranormal, so when weird things would happen, they would come to me and tell me.
Which is something that I think is awesome. I mean, when you do this type of stuff, people will come to you and share stories that it would be the strangest people that you would never expect to hear these stories from, but they know that you're kind of safe to talk to about this.
Right,
stuff.
Yeah.
And it's something that I always find is fascinating. I've had people that I've known my entire life until I started doing this radio program never shared anything that would make me think that they were even remotely engaged in anything paranormal, and come and relate like the most amazing stories you would ever want to hear. And it's kind of cool. It promotes kind of an openness with other people that you, in a way to connect with other people that you didn't have before.
That's what we really love about doing this is that, you know, you got people out there that have experiences, and where do they turn? They can't just turn to anybody because people are going to laugh at them or say, oh, you got a mental health issue. Which I think is wrong. You know, people are sensitive for a reason, you know, and that's what's really cool is why we do this, you know, doing this stuff like we do house investigation and stuff. We're helping somebody who needs help, who has nowhere else to turn.
So with when you do the house investigations, I mean, is that the focus, is to kind of help people, and how is it that you help them?
We're kind of an observe and report type of group. Well, you know, Phil will relate some of the experiences that he might get through the sensitivity, and we will tell them, okay, this is what we got here. So it kind of confirms to those people that, you know, it wasn't just them experiencing something, that someone else who came in from the outside also experienced something strange, and we give that to them. And then depending on what they want to do, if they're religious, they might want to call, you know, their religious leader to come do a blessing or something like that. But they have that information that we collect for them kind of to back them up.
So as being a sensitive, are you able to kind of being that way, are you able, more aptly able to give them information that's going to help them kind of allay their fears?
I hope so. You know, whatever I pick up, it's like when you go into a location being a sensitive, you don't know what you're going to pick up. It could be anything, you know. And, you know, if I'm going to pick up, say, we went to a place up in this old farmhouse up in Cleveland, and they were saying that a girl or somebody was turning off the light as the lady was doing the laundry down in the basement. As soon as I went down there, I felt the girl. And she didn't take very kind to me because I got very sick. And that was just, you know, some spirits will actually make you sick because just how strong they are, you know, or they'll just take all their energy and just like hit you with it, you know, and you just can't deal with it. But, you know, when we do investigations, that's my whole thing is that I'm going in there. I'm going to at least help somebody.
See, I think it's interesting, and it sparked a memory in myself when you said that making you ill. I had the opportunity to go witness or be a part of an investigation in Linesville, Pennsylvania, the Knickerbocker Hotel. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that location. And I was in a room, standing alone in a room, and I started getting, like, nauseous. I could feel something was in there, and I started getting nauseous. I stood in that room for as long as I could.
Yeah.
Kind of being the defiant jerk that I am, but I did. I felt very sick, and then when I left the room, it was like immediate relief from that. So it was like, but I also think I have to ask you a question: how often do you encounter spirits that aren't negatively affecting you? I mean, is this just a rare thing that because you're saying you get smacked in the face and you're sick, all kinds?
I really haven't experienced anything negative in a while. The last thing I had happen was when I was coming home from work, and this just happened about 2 weeks ago. I get home about 10 o'clock in the evening, come up the staircase into the kitchen, and I'm standing in the doorway of the kitchen and where the stairs go down to the basement, and I'm greeting the dogs and stuff, and a woman says, "Welcome home," just like really, really sweet, sincere voice. And I was like, "Thank you," because that's, they're being sincere. And you know, when I was sick for 12 years, nobody knew why. I was in the hospitals. Even when I was in Australia for 2 months by myself, I was in hospital out there. Nobody knew why. 12 years later, they found I'm allergic to dairy. You know, and when we're doing these investigations and you're feeling, you don't know why you're not feeling well. I had a black guy come up to me when we were down in Haydenville, and they went into some tunnel down on the other side of the cemetery. I had this black guy come up and said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm fine." And he just disappeared. So it's nice to get... That's what I like about spirits is there's a lot of really nice spirits out there that watch out for your well-being,
I would imagine if it's honestly the spirits of people that passed over, it's just like anybody else out there. I mean, if our consciousness does, in fact, persist after our bodies pass away... it makes sense that they would be just like the people you walk and encounter on the streets, but I would think that they're a little more sensitive to how other people are, a little more empathic.
Well, I always heard that if you're negative in life, you're going to be that way in death. Like if you were a nasty person, you had a nasty attitude and always treated people mean, that's the way your spirit's going to be, You're going to probably be like a demon haunting a house.
Right. You are who you are, and that doesn't matter if you're alive or dead, I guess, is what
we're saying.
We're talking with the Ohio Exploration Society's Jason and Philip, and we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to get into some EVPs that you guys brought in with us, and that should be real exciting because, who doesn't love a good EVP?
That's right.
OhioExploration.com is the website. We're going to take this break. We'll be right back.
Incantations.
And we're back. We've got the Ohio Exploration Society's Jason and Philip with us. OhioExploration.com. That's their website. You can go out and check it out. They've got tons of great information out there, lots of different sites that they've been to. It's really a really cool site, and there's a lot of fantastic information out there. I would encourage anybody listening to the show to go out and do that. So we're going to get into some EVPs here then.
All right.
We're gonna start this, and hopefully all the listeners are ready to hear some really cool stuff. And I'll let you guys set it up. The first set you have here is from the Haydenville Tunnel, which you just mentioned.
Good memories.
Yes. Haydenville was Ohio's last company town, and the Haydenville Tunnel was built through this hillside. It was a brick
transport
manufacturing town.
Okay.
So they dug the clay out on one side of this hill, sent it through this small tunnel. You could reach your hands out, touch both sides. You could reach up and touch the ceiling. So it wasn't a very big tunnel. So it was almost like mine cars of clay that they had sent through this tunnel down to the brick kilns to fire them. The tunnel was abandoned in the 1950s. At some point over the years, parts of the tunnel had collapsed. About 100 yards in or so, it's collapsed so bad that you can't get past that point. So we were down in this tunnel. This is setting up for the first EVP here. Phil was pointing toward the collapse section. We were trying to figure out if we could move some stuff and maybe crawl through to get to the other side.
And that was a brave one. He said, yeah, I can go crawl through this.
So he thought he saw maybe an area that we could do this. And he's telling us, look right there. And we get this voice on our audio recording screaming, no, not that tunnel.
So we're gonna play that one right now. Hold on. Let's do that again. So I gotta say, that's not too hard to decipher what it's saying.
Right.
That's not very questionable. I know a lot of people, and when it comes up with the EVPs, everyone's gonna say this is auditory. All the skeptics, and I want to. This is one of the things that it does kind of drive me a little batty. All the skeptics out there say, well, it's auditory pareidolia, which until you get to the class A, I can kind of buy that a little bit. Yeah,
right.
We do want to see patterns, but there's clearly, that's yelling.
It was yelling.
You can actually hear the microphone kind of peaking.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's hitting that peak level. It's not.
I tell people if we heard that when we were there, we would have been out of there.
You're right, not that tunnel. We'll see you later. So, I mean, that's a pretty amazing. I'm going to play that one more time, and then we'll go on to the next one. Maybe. Okay. Hold on. So, it's very clear what that is.
Yep.
Yeah.
So if you want to set up the next one, then.
Okay, so the next one, we took a new group of people to the tunnel for the first time. We walked down the tunnel quite a ways, and we were there for a little while. And me and one of the other people from my group were getting kind of bored because nothing really was going on. So I was like, all right, well, let's start walking out of here. So we walk off from, the main group of people. We get about 20 feet from them. And she smacks me on the arm and says, stop. I said, stop what? And she says, stop pulling on my jacket sleeve. And I said, I'm not pulling on your jacket sleeve. So she's like, yeah, whatever. So we start walking again. And a few seconds later, she says, see, you just did it again. I said, no, I didn't. So I yelled down at the other guys, hey, Misty just got touched down here. And you'll hear the guy reply, did she? And she's like going off in the background like, hey, this is not nothing, it's you. Well, we get this, it's one of the creepiest voices I've heard, and it says, that's her arm I'm touching, that's her
now,
arm.
Also in this, to note that I was behind you and you had both your hands filled with equipment. There's no way, and he was in front of her.
Well,
you know. So, it's like...
I get that. I get that not wanting to be touched by a ghost. But we're going to go ahead and play this one a few times as well here. Okay, hold on. So clearly they're saying it twice, I believe. That's her arm, that's her arm.
Yeah.
So, once again, a little bit beyond pareidolia, I think. I think we can put that one to bed.
But you can see the difference in the yelling one, and then this one is a little bit more...
Subdued.
Yeah.
Okay, so going on to the next one then from Haydenville.
The next one from Haydenville, this sounds like... a voice of a young girl. There were no young girls with us there that day. But we were discussing seeing like a glimmer of light down toward the end of the tunnel, and that ended up just being like a reflection from a flashlight from on an aluminum can. We picked up this voice. We're not exactly sure what it says. It's maybe, why don't you find me, or why don't you watch me, maybe.
Okay, well, we'll take a listen to this one as well.
I saw two, man.
That again. Maybe.
I saw two, man.
So once again, it's clearly a voice. It's clearly saying something. I get the why don't you, and then, yeah, what it says
something
at the end
mean.
There, it's something, but it's kind of obfuscated a little bit. But
right.
The why don't you is, like, clear as day.
Right. And I want to add also that every single time we've gone to this tunnel, we've walked out with at least a couple of EVPs.
And a photograph.
And we have a photograph on our website, and you can see almost like a shadow of a person standing inside the tunnel. It's almost like a cloud of mist forms around this image of a person. But the tunnel, I want to emphasize, is extremely dangerous. Sections of it have already collapsed. The last time I went in there was about a year and a half ago, and more had collapsed since then, and I vowed never to go back inside that thing because I don't want to end up being a ghost there.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want people to come and get EVPs of you.
Right. But I think the Forest Service now has put up bars on the tunnel so no one can get in, but it's now a bat sanctuary from what I've heard.
Oh, well, then you go there and get guano. So
yes.
There you go.
Which is, you know... It's a valuable export for a lot of countries. So the next site you have on here is the Majestic Theater. I don't know if you kind of want to set that up.
Okay, Majestic Theater is an old theater down in Chillicothe. During the Spanish flu epidemic in 1918, Camp Sherman was nearby, and a lot of soldiers catched the flu and passed away. Well, they used the Majestic Theater as kind of a temporary morgue. And they stacked bodies up under the stage until they could be brought up onto the stage where they were embalmed. They drained the blood and all the bodily fluids out to the alley adjacent to the theater. And to this day, it's still known as Bloody Alley. So we got the chance to go in and investigate the Majestic. A couple of strange things happened here or there. We got a couple of EVPs that aren't as great as the Haydenville ones. You know, like you said, it could be the matrixing of audio for those. You couldn't really tell, mostly whispers. This, I don't know if it was a coincidence or not. This is not actually an EVP. There was a boiler down in the basement that had this belt that was squeaking the whole time we were there. And it was very annoying. And I asked if they could do me a favor and make that thing quit squeaking. And almost immediately, this belt stopped squeaking, did not squeak for the rest of the night. And I talked to the person that let us in the next day, and they said, well, it's squeaking again today, but the rest of that night, not a peep from it.
So this is audio of that stopping then?
This is audio of that squeaking stopping.
All right, we're going to go ahead and play that here.
Can you do me a favor and make that thing quit squeaking, please? Thank you.
Hey, pretty, wasn't that easy? So there it is. It just stops. Hey, that's a friendly ghost. That's a friendly ghost. You gotta love that. So that's not a that's a display of interaction then between the living and the dead. So I guess the next thing we have on is the Greater Columbus Antique Mall, which, where's this located?
This is in Columbus, just north of the intersection of High and Green Lawn. It was built in the late 1800s as a private residence at first. It later went on to become an Elks Lodge, and then I think a couple years after that closed, it hosted a couple of different funeral homes. And then it sat vacant for a while in the Antique Mall. People came and bought it and opened the antique mall there. The building had been added on a couple times. They added like an auditorium and things like that during the Elks Lodge days. And I think there was even a restaurant in there at one time. Well, there, a tall guy wearing an old gray suit is supposed to walk around the place. Children have been seen playing on the second floor. An orb of light is supposed to be seen coming down the hallways, and there's supposed to be a ghost of a woman wearing a yellow dress in this one particular section that's supposed to come there at a predetermined time, like, what was it, like 9:30 every Friday night or something like that. So we did an investigation at that time and sat there for a long time, and the lady never came. But, We did get some EVPs from there. Our first one up, we were there in the summertime, and of course they shut off all of the HVAC and stuff while we were there. So it was pretty hot. And one of our other investigators was coming in late, and one of our guys said, "Did you bring any cool air with you?" And you'd hear a whispery no before she even has a chance to reply.
All right, here we go.
Did you bring some cool air? Did you bring some cool air? Did you bring some cool air?
So clearly, no one brought any cool air with them, and you got to swelter the rest of the night.
Yeah, sat there sweating.
So for the next one, let's see.
The next one up, this was actually recorded on a video camera we had set up on stage. We set the video camera up on the stage looking out over the whole place where they have all these antiques piled up. We were on the complete opposite side of the room from the video camera. And when I was reviewing the tape, I heard this voice, and it sounded like it was right up on the camcorder whispering directly into the mic saying, "Harry."
All right. We're going to play this one now? Maybe. Once again, that's kind of undeniable what's being said there. I mean, I don't think that's... It's pretty clear.
It almost made me fall out of off my couch because I had the headphones on, turned all the way up to try to hear the audio, and it was pretty
loud. But he also turned off the camera.
Yeah, that particular camera was turned off several times that night, and it's the kind of camera where you have to, like, push in and flip a switch to be able to turn it off.
So it takes some doing to turn it off.
Right. The next one we have here is actually some knocking that we heard. It was Phil and I standing having a discussion, and we hear a knocking sound, and it was neither of us, and we were the only people in the room.
All right, we're going to play this right now.
Come behind you. What was that?
What?
Tell the MJ. What was that?
What?
Tell the MJ. What was that?
What I love about that, there's a reaction to it. You know, yeah. you clearly had heard it in the environment around you, but you just
yeah.
So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and we looked around, you know, and tried to see if we could find anything that could have made that sound, and we didn't find anything. The last one from Greater Columbus Antique Mall. This one kind of freaked me out. This is also not an EVP, but I was going around collecting the equipment, and I just asked out loud in the room, "Do you have any last words?" And then this clock chimes in with a pretty creepy chime that I was all by myself in the dark when I heard.
So that's always fun. All right, we're going to play this one here.
I'm about to leave. Any last words?
So clearly this is, again, a call and response kind of situation, too. And they got the last word.
Right, they right. did. And it almost felt like I was in a horror movie at that point. Like, you know, something big was about to jump out at me.
That would be a little bit unsettling. We're going to have to take a quick break here, everybody. But we've got Jason and Philip of the Ohio Exploration Society in here with us. And you want to go to the website, it's ohioexploration.com. We'll be right back with some more EVPs. And we're back. We've got the Ohio Exploration Society in-house with us. We've got Jason and Philip from that group. And we've been playing some pretty cool EVPs here, and we're going to continue doing that. The first one that you got lined up at, for this segment here is Moonville Tunnel, which I think a lot of people should probably be pretty familiar with.
Yeah, a lot of people, especially in more recent years after GPS and all that stuff came out, Moonville Tunnel is deep in Vinton County in the Wayne National Forest, and it was kind of difficult to locate, you know, 15 years ago when you didn't have that kind of stuff readily available. But almost every time we've gone down now, it's like a new tourist attraction. There's been cars out the wazoo there. But Moonville, it was established in the 1850s along the Marietta-Cincinnati Railroad. There are several legends about the tunnel. Most of them boil down to an engineer or brakeman or conductor that was killed on the tracks, and you're supposed to see his lantern. This was the site of probably my most intense paranormal experience in all of the time that I've been doing this. We were there with the documentary crew, and we were standing in a circle facing out from each other. The sun had just set, it had just got dark. The guys from the documentary crew started freaking out because on one of the end of the tunnel, they heard like a dripping sound. And I said, "That's just water coming from the top of the tunnel. Don't worry about that. I hear that all the time." So I look back down to the other end, and I see a little glimmer of light. It almost looked like a firefly, but it stayed lit. And I turn and say, "Hey, guys, I see a light." And everyone looks, and of course it's gone. And seconds later, we hear this scuffling sound coming down the hill from just outside the tunnel. Then very distinctive footsteps come walking onto the gravel of the old rail bed, and then running straight toward us. And, I mean, it was loud in this tunnel, echoing loud. So I pulled out the flashlight, turned it on, and the running immediately stopped. Whatever was in there with us, but this fog rolled in that was so thick we couldn't see to the end of the tunnel. So I said, "All right, let's go." So we go walking toward the fog. We get down to the end of the tunnel. The a static electricity feeling. All the hairs on my arms, neck, everywhere stood on end. My EMF meter went all the way up to the top and stayed there. One of only like a handful of times it's ever done that. We had a temperature drop of 15 degrees, and then one of the guys said, "Do you smell that?" And I said, "Yeah, it smelled like this old musk cologne." And at that point, the guys from the documentary team took off running, and we went running back after them, grabbed them, and said, "This is what we came here for." So we get back down there, fog was gone, the feeling was gone, it was like nothing happened, and it just that running sound. And we've been there since, and we've run through the tracks, and it was nowhere near as loud as
even looking at where it happened. There's no way somebody could have scuffled down that right. embankment, because it's cliffs.
Yeah,
another thing was, I had the lucky deal with having one of the producers breathe right on my neck. Just literally had his head on my neck, was breathing on me. It was the most uncomfortable time I've had with somebody.
But anyway, the EVP we got here, we're doing a follow-up investigation. I think it was January 2013. And we went then because we knew no one would be out there in cold and snow, so we had the place to ourselves. We encountered a pack of angry coyotes that had us in the tunnel for a little while.
Wow.
So that was interesting. But we recorded an EVP, and it's a very defined, whispery no.
Just asking for a little bit of help from you.
What was it?
Just asking for a little bit of help from you.
That was something. What was it?
One more time.
Just asking for a little bit of help from you.
That was something. What was it?
Just asking.
That one is clear as day. I mean, it's actually more audible and more clear than the people talking on the recording.
Yeah, it sounded like it was right in the microphone.
That's a pretty impressive one. I mean, it's short, but as far as what it's saying, but it's super clear. It's more clear than the other audio, which is, to me, that eliminates the white noise matrix completely.
Oh, yeah. And what he was discussing when he said that was something, that was the coyotes that we heard. So that's why we're asking for help.
Get out there and scare the coyotes away.
Yeah. They didn't want to help us, though.
No. So Greenlawn Abbey, you could just share that a little bit.
Greenlawn Abbey was built in 1927. It's a big two-story mausoleum in Columbus. I think there was enough for 600 and some people buried in there, or entombed, I should say. One of the people entombed there is Howard Thurston, the magician, and we've seen his tomb. It's pretty cool. He had like a magician's wand and things like that.
Well, he did until somebody stole it.
Yeah, and we went back later, and it was gone, so someone took it. But his ghost was supposed to, when he died, he said that he would come back to the Abbey and
to prove that there was life
after death. And people went to see him, and he never did come around. But we got into the Abbey, and our first EVP here was actually recorded in the daytime. And it was our first time there, and one of our members said, "This place is sweet." And then you hear the whispery no.
Yeah, I guess that's all a matter of perspective. All right.
Asking for a little bit of help from you.
There we go. Again, I guess if it depends on if you're in there or not.
Our next one, we were walking around the mausoleum, and it was all guys there, and we recorded this EVP. It sounds like a little girl saying Nana or Hannah or Anna. But it definitely wasn't one of our voices.
All right. To me, it definitely sounds like Nana. And it kind of makes sense because that's maybe a little girl looking for her grandmother. Yes. Something like that.
Yep. Our next one, this was also recorded during our first trip there in the daytime. We were walking, there are a couple of wings on this mausoleum, and we walked down one wing first, and we were standing down at that end, and we hear a gate. There's gates that open up into, like, little family rooms, I guess you could call them.
Little crypt areas.
Yeah, crypt areas where families were, and we hear this gate open up, and I was thinking, oh, great, you know, a homeless person is in here or something. So we go down to, you know, tell them we're not there to mess with them, and no one was down there.
Okay, here's the gate closing. So once again, that's a very audible, very clear. I would imagine a little bit disturbing being down there.
Especially after we saw no one was there. That's when the chills went down.
Well, this place is actually pretty creepy and was very hard to get into.
Yeah.
The only reason we got in there was because somebody highly vandalized the building. I mean, it looked like a bomb went off inside. So I was walking the corridors at night by myself. One time I come in, five bodies are missing. I was like, oh, man. Find out that later on that the family members took them out because of the vandalism. But we have done a lot of restoration on the building and stuff, and it's now taken over by the Landmarks Foundation, and it's looking awesome. And we've still got a lot of work to do. The gates on one level were all stolen and scrapped to the little chambers, but we're able to get some of them back. But it's still ongoing process, and little by little is all I can say.
Yeah, they're doing a good job trying to get that place restored and back up to par, because for a long time it just sat there and no one took care of it. Our next EVP, we're there at a night investigation, and this was recorded by our friends over at the Central Ohio Paranormal Society. And it's a loud whisper saying, "Ask me."
All right, here we go. I find very interesting in that one particular that the voice that says "ask me" has kind of an echo to it.
It does.
So suggesting that it is reacting within the environment that's
mm-hmm.
around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty that's something I don't think a lot of people would notice, but that, you know, that resonation within the environment
is right.
Kind of suggestive that it's there. It's part of the environment. It's being bounced off the wall. So there is something to be said for that, I guess, as accepting it as evidence. So the next one we have is the Palmer Road Crybaby Bridge.
Yeah, Palmer Road Crybaby Bridge. There's a Crybaby Bridge. There's 88 counties in Ohio. Every single one of them have at least one or two Crybaby Bridges. So, and we've been to dozens of them to see if we get anything, and we never have. Crybaby Bridges, you know, for legend says for one reason or another, a mother threw her baby off the bridge or got killed at the bridge or the dad killed him. You know, there's so many of them, and it's a dime a dozen for these legends. So we went to Palmer Road Crybaby Bridge. This is up in Mercer County, and we were not expecting anything at all to happen. We pulled up in the car, and our guy is turning on his EVP recorder and, you know, having his opening remark, okay, we're at Crybaby Bridge. And right as soon as he turned his recorder on, before we even got out of the car, we get this female voice yelling over him, drowns his voice out, saying, "I will not deny my baby." And then you'll hear him say, "Bridge," and then kind of like a cry at the end.
Okay, here it goes. So that's clearly, and this is something that I've heard and not a lot of people bring out, though, is the talking over. But that is very clear that there's multiple voices there, and also that what she's saying is very clear. So it's over top of, once again, kind of like the one there a little earlier where it was more clear than you guys, but it's a very...
Yeah, it drowned him out completely.
Every, like, one thing about EVPs is they always seem to always be different. Whether they're going to be hard to hear, you have to really listen, maybe clear like that, or, you know, I can't explain it. All I know is that, you know, we're lucky to get it.
Right, and I know we don't have a lot of time left here. I do want to mention the photograph that you showed me, and it's probably one of the absolute best ghost photographs, and that's going back to, you know, the Brown Lady of the Stairs and all that. I mean, it is a really amazing photograph. And I know that from time to time you said you get decent photographic evidence, but when you guys saw that photograph for the first time, what was the reaction there?
We were
10 years later.
Yeah, we got back to his apartment and he was loading them on the computer, and as they loaded, like, little thumbnail images would come up, and that little thumbnail came up and we saw that, and like, he almost fell out of his chair. And we immediately went and opened that picture and we're like, holy crap, you know.
Cuz that's a pretty amazing photograph. I am honestly, if I can, I would like to post that up on the website for
people. Go for it.
Excuse me. So we're at the end here, I guess. What I normally do is I let my guests tell people where they can get a hold of them or let people know what they've got going on. And so I'm going to go ahead and do that right now.
Okay. If you wanted to get a hold of us, you know, just go to our website, OhioExploration.com. Right on the main page, if you scroll down, we have a mailing address. It's 520 Hill Road North, number 972, Pickerington, Ohio, 43147. If you would like to give us a call, it's 614-835-6446.
Well, I want to thank you guys for coming on and sharing your EVPs with you, talking with us about paranormal, because this has been an absolute blast for me. Hopefully not too painful for you guys.
No, not at all.
You know, I appreciate you guys coming out to do this in studio as well, because it's kind of nice to get to look at everybody while I'm talking to them and put faces to the voice and names that I've had come across. This is fantastic. I really appreciate you guys coming down. And to all the listeners out there, OhioExploration.com, links are up at GrandDarkConspiracy.com.